And I don't know about you, but looking at this family and all the Palestinians I worked with during my time in Palestine, what I kept thinking was just how long can people live like this? You know, how long can people endure this kind of a system before rising up, standing up for their rights, resisting? Well, of course, the answer is that Palestinians are and have been resisting for a very long time. We hear about one kind of resistance, violent resistance, suicide bombers that kill innocent Israelis. And people are always asking me, you know, Anna, why are Palestinians always resisting with bombs? Why are they always strapping bombs to themselves, trying to kill as many Israelis as possible? Why don't they use nonviolent resistance, like Martin Luther King talked about, like Gandhi talked about? Where are those things happening? Well, the answer is that Palestinians are and have been using non-violent resistance, not just once in a while, not just here and there, but literally almost every second of almost every single day of their lives. Just think about it for a moment. Think about Munira and her family. Simply staying in their home. Simply saying, look, you've taken our land, you've taken our freedom, but you will not take our home. Is a kind of resistance, and it is nonviolent. This is nonviolent resistance. Think about the villagers of Yanun who've come back to their homes and their land. They know that they could be beaten up, they know that they could even be killed by the settlers, but they also know that it is their right to be in their homes, on their land, and they're coming back to defend that right. This is nonviolent resistance. And in my opinion, any attempt on the part of Palestinians to maintain any kind of normalcy or dignity in their daily lives, in spite of this occupation, is a kind of resistance to that system. It's just not something you ever hear about in the newspapers and media. And here's a couple other examples of everyday nonviolent resistance in Palestine. Here's a group of women from the Tulkarm region who've been cut off from their trees by the wall. They've lost their livelihoods, so they've formed an embroidery cooperative to sell embroidery to support themselves and their families. Instead of giving up, instead of leaving, this is nonviolent resistance. This is the village of Atawani, where settlers have actually boiled barley seeds in rat poison and spread that poison around the landscape of Atawani to try and dissuade shepherds from bringing their sheep to their land for fear that the sheep will eat the poison and be killed. And well, I talked to the shepherd, and she knew about the poison, but she also knew that if she doesn't come back to her land, then the settlers would have gotten exactly what they wanted, and over time they would have come and confiscated the land, saying, well, nobody else was using it. So she's coming back to defend her right to be on her land, even if she might lose a sheep or two. This is nonviolent resistance. Painting the wall. Nonviolent resistance. Climbing the wall is nonviolent resistance. Here's a young boy who's building his own roadblock out of rocks and wire that he found in his village. And he told me, Anna, I'm going to build a roadblock so that the jeeps can't raid my village tonight. This is nonviolent resistance. And finally, demonstrations are a kind of resistance happening almost daily in Palestine. We just don't hear very much about them, where communities of Palestinians will march down to the land that is being threatened. Here you can see a farmer trying to explain to the soldiers that have been placed there to basically protect the bulldozers that are uprooting the trees. He's trying to explain to them that the trees being uprooted belong to him and his family and have for generations. This is something else you might see at a demonstration, Palestinians who've come together to pray on their land. And I find it particularly moving given that for many of these Palestinians, this could be their last chance to ever be on their land. And they're choosing to spend these final moments together as a community in silence, in worship on their land. Now, although most of these demonstrations are primarily peaceful, they are often met with a great deal of violence from the soldiers who throw tear gas or sound bombs. There are sometimes rubber bullets or even live ammunition used against nonviolent demonstrators. There is also sometimes violence from the Palestinian side. Here you can see a picture of a Palestinian boy who's picked up a stone and is throwing it at Israeli soldiers and jeeps at a demonstration. And I include it not because stone throwing has anything to do with my work with IWPS, it doesn't, but first of all because it is the reality. There are stones thrown at these demonstrations. And second of all, to give it a little bit of perspective. So the stone throwing that you see here is used as the justification for the mass imprisonment of young Palestinian men who are put in jail for throwing these stones. And well, I would agree that a stone is definitely a weapon, right? You know, you can kill somebody with a stone, no question about it, but we don't get much sort of context in which these stones are actually thrown. So for example, this boy, he hasn't sort of gathered up a bunch of stones and snuck across the border into Israel to stone as many Israelis as possible because he hates Jews. This boy is in his village, and he's watching jeeps and bulldozers surround his village, uproot his trees, and build a wall around his community. And he's picking up a stone and throwing it at those jeeps, at those bulldozers. And I guess I would just ask you, you know, if someone were to come into your home and start carrying out your television, and then your stereo, and then your computer, at one point would you pick up a lamp and throw it at them? You know, it's not about justifying, it's about being realistic. What would you expect of yourself in that situation, and how does it compare to what you expect of the Palestinians in the situation they're in right now with the wall? Like I said, many of these kids end up in jail. Here are five kids from the village of Marda near where I lived, and a jeep was raiding their village one night, and they threw stones at the jeep. No soldiers were hurt. In fact, very few soldiers have actually been hurt by these stones because they're usually thrown from very far away for fear of being arrested. And in fact, these five kids were picked up for stone throwing and put into jail for 6 months. More than 340 Palestinian children and 9,500 adult Palestinian political prisoners are being held in Israeli prisons today. More than 10% of these are what are called administrative detainees, which means that they can be held without charge indefinitely. And I was once walking in Ramallah where I found a silent procession of people holding photographs of their loved ones being held in Israeli prisons. So they asked me to show them to the people of America, so that's what I'm doing. About 40% of the entire adult Palestinian male population in the occupied territories has been detained in Israeli detention. Torture and humiliation are systematic, according to Amnesty International. And I guess what I find so incredible is that in spite of the systematic imprisonment of Palestinians involved in violent and nonviolent resistance, in spite of the checkpoints and the roadblocks and the settlements and the outposts and the wall and the land confiscation, in spite of all of these things, that Palestinians continue to resist, continue to stand up for their rights. And the finale of my presentation is a slideshow of photographs that I and my colleagues took at demonstrations that I think sort of illustrates what I see as the incredible resilience and strength that remains with the Palestinian people. It is really this resilience and strength that gives me hope for the future, and that's why I'd like to share it with you.